I'm Cameron Crookston.
And I'm Patrick Murray.
And this is Video Queens,
the show where two queens take a look back at the movies that made them.
And this week, we watched another gay sequel. The incest puppy play vomit scene was a little too much for me. Gosh, so it's our season finale, Patrick.
It is, and this was meant to be like a full circle moment. Look at where we started, look at where we are now. We started with another gay movie, and here we are at another gay sequel.
Bookends, Good Night, Desdemona, Sunrise, Sunset.
And yet, this was the worst movie we've watched this entire time. Hands down, Boy Culture, honestly, is, I'm like, I'll take another look at it.
I think you should rewatch it.
I hated this movie. I hated it so much. It made me so upset. It was garbage, trash, bullshit nonsense.
Okay, I didn't love it. But it did not really stir anything in me. It was interesting because I had watched, because we've watched another gay movie relatively recently. And so to compare them, so I kept going back to, is this worse than another gay movie?
Yes, it is. It is. Yes, it is.
But it didn't jump out as much. Yeah, I forgot a lot about this movie because there's not a lot, because there's no plot. So there's not a lot for your brain to latch onto. There were a lot of characters that I remember as cameos who were fully like in the movie.
Agreed. It's interesting. What I think maybe the only thing that stuck with me from this movie was like, I remember them getting crabs, and I remember Brent Cork.
Yes.
I remember him, and I thought that he did, I thought that they did, like I made up an additional scene where, like, they fuck underwater.
You do love, you love an additional scene that you create in your own head, in your memory.
Instead of the conclusion of that arc was just, he's clearly that he had just wrapped filming. So the guy's like, goodbye, my sweet merman. Guess you're not here. I'll leave you this crown. I'll just pollute the ocean. Okay, let's get this fucking plot out of the way, because and to anyone who's seen this movie and would like to say what plot, I will like your comment.
I would make an argument that however thin and discombobulated and nonsensical it is, this movie technically has a plot, so why don't I save you the mental brain cramps?
You're right.
I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah.
You're doing so well, by the way.
I'm having a really hard time.
I know you are. Can I get you anything? We're not in the same room, but I'll Uber you a glass of water.
I need an eternal sunshine of the spotless mind memory purge of what I just watched. And then also knowing that I watched it before and I don't remember hating it that much.
That means you've grown. That means you've grown. So this movie is actually teaching you a valuable lesson already. And we haven't even gotten to the moral lesson.
This is a full circle moment.
Anyway. Okay. All right. So another gay sequel is a direct sequel to another gay movie, even though three of the four cast members have been recast.
First issue.
Okay. Keep it in your pocket. We will get there. Okay. So, we rejoin Nico, Griff, Jared and Andy,
aka Andy Baseball Romy Nerd.
Correct. They are going on spring break. They go to Fort Lauderdale. They say Fort Lauderdale about 47 times in this movie, like they're bragging about it. When they get to this gay all-inclusive resort that they're at, it turns out that there is a gay sex contest going on where you get points for hooking up, and that kind of becomes a through line of the movie because it kind of hits them all at different angles. Griff and Baseball and Nerd, as you remember from the last movie, are now a couple, and so they have to negotiate whether or not they're going to play the sex contest and how to be in an open relationship. Andy wants to sleep with as many people as possible because he's really slutty now. But in the first 5 minutes, he meets a really cute virgin and he has to deal with dating him and not hooking up. And no one wants to fuck Nico and he has to deal with that. That's the plot of the movie. In the background, RuPaul is like the cruise director, even though we're on dry land. Lady Bunny is the MC drag queen. We get a villain called the Jaspers, which is a reference to the Heathers. There's also some Mean Girls thrown in there. And for no particular reason, they're trying to destroy our four leads. And just for fun, on the plane, they meet fucking, I'm gonna say Anderson
Cooper. Perez Hilton.
They meet Perez Hilton, who has a religious awakening and then spends the rest of the movie following them around, kind of biblically slut-shaming everyone for no reason. And that's the movie.
Okay. I hope that you're able to leave in all of the sighs and grunts I was making. I know that, like, for anyone listening at home, like, maybe you couldn't hear my eyes rolling, but, like, I hated this movie. I hated it so much.
Eye rolls are so loud, I have to edit out your eye rolls of every episode because I just, like, the grinding motion of the gears.
We're peeking. First of all, I hate Perez Hilton. Like, he's so annoying. And, like, the only thing he ever was, like, a nasty blogger that we were, like, he was, like, ooh, guilty pleasure. And then, like, once, but, like, him, like, whenever he documented his own life, we were, like, ooh, no, like, we do not need a peek behind the curtain. The Wizard of Oz is ugly and gross. And so, like, now we have to watch him act. I looked like RuPaul, Lady Bunny, a brief appearance by Willem.
I know.
Those were the shining lights, the beacons for me to be like, oh, like, please, like, take me somewhere else. Like, take me to your movie. Because RuPaul was great. Sure. And I'm like, also, was RuPaul doing an impression of Simone in some kind of, like, time machine? Did you not get strong notes of Simone's, like, comedy performance in RuPaul's?
I didn't. What I wrote down, because
you'll get it. And yeah, watch it again. I'm gonna lock you up, pour water on you, and make you watch this on a loop, and you'd be like, no,
I'd rather die. What I wrote down is, so Ru spends most of this kind of like being like a game show host for the Sexcapades, and I wrote down, like, RuPaul is really in her own element when she's playing a not quite ironic hostess.
RuPaul was so great in this movie. Like, RuPaul, throwing it back to another gay movie, like, I remember when you were saying, like, you laughed exactly once. I laughed exactly zero, but I smiled once. It was at a cartoon. And I think I, like, nodded at RuPaul. Like, RuPaul, I was like, yeah, what you're saying isn't funny because what they've written is terrible. Mm-hmm. But you are doing a good job. And, like, I'm, like, in the corner shaking. And then, like, you're talking and I get, like, a little breath of air. And I'm like, wait, maybe I'm okay. And then it goes back to, like, the shaking, the monsters, the demons.
Like, she's, like, rubbing your back while you're really, really sick. And it's not enough to heal you, but it's just a little respite.
Yes.
There were some great cameos in this quote-unquote movie.
Were there?
Yeah, there were.
Who?
So I did not realize the first time I watched this who Willem was. So I was really excited to see Willem. And I screamed out loud, oh, my God, Willem.
Yeah.
And I think part of the
reason... I feel like you also screamed, like, knowing that I was going to get to watch it.
I don't think about you unless you're right in front of me. I have no object permanence with you. That's why we do the podcast, so I keep remembering you, Caleb.
So vicious and so funny. My God.
So Willem plays a flight attendant, and the reason that you may not even notice Willem is the other flight attendant is Amanda Lepore.
Yes.
So that takes a lot of air out of the room in a good way. There are also, like, even though most of the main characters aren't back, they do bring in a lot of the side characters from the original movie in tiny cameos. So In the first scene, the mom, who's just Debbie from Queer as Folk, who I love, gets a little moment. Muffler can't come with them because she's going golfing. Not great, guys. The dad is in this movie way more than I remember, because it turns out he snuck away to Fort Lauderdale to have sex. Yeah. And there's even a little dream sequence where Andy is trying to decide whether or not to be slutty, I think. And his parents, who are Scott Thompson and Lipsinka, appear as the angel and the devil on his shoulders, but it's baby Jane and Blanche. And I did not know who that was the first time I watched this. So I was very, very, very excited.
Yeah. I think, okay, so I was trying to think about like what made this movie so horrendous. And what I will say is, like, you were right. There is actually more of a plot to this one, but the plot is so stupid. Like, it's, again, it's like, you know, they need to win this sex contest and the Jaspers are like their enemies. And it's like, it's trying so hard to be over the top. Like, first of all, the sound effects, like, it's like, and like, they'll, someone will flick someone and it'll be like, it's so stupid. The music is like, partway through, I'm like, this music is awful. This is elevator music. Like, they didn't even have a dollar to get like any kind of real song. So all of this apparent comedy and scene work is being played to like, dum, 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 dum. And you're like, this is killing any energy.
I've literally never seen you this angry, and I don't just mean about movies, I mean about life. I've never seen you this heated.
Yes, because the thing about the first movie was, it was like, okay, they all need to lose their virginity, but what it was like a send up of gay culture or like uniquely gay experiences. This is not a uniquely gay experience to like have literal crabs like crawl into the bed that you all sleep in naked, and then like, and it's just so fucking stupid. Like, it's just like, it's not, it's, it was nothing. First of all, the sex, they wasn't even really a big part of it. Like, their sexual stuff, they would just be like, oh, by the way, this person fucked this person that night. Then like, sure, they have the like disgusting, like, oh, they switched, the Jaspers switched out the lube for glue. Okay, so that is not like a thing any of us have experienced. That's not, it's just like a bad idea that you filmed. So then there's like a hand on an ass that is ripped away. Like, why was there so much blood?
There was a lot of blood in this movie.
There was a lot of blood and like open wounds. And like, just, yeah, it wasn't like a sex comedy. It was just like a like torture porn. It was like, did Eli Roth do this? Like,
okay,
sorry.
No, that's why we're here. So I did not like this movie. However, because you are taking such strong stance, it's kind of polarizing me to defend it. And I'm just going to lean into it.
I think so, you should, but also, what does that say about you?
That I'm a contrarian and that I just want to make you sad. No, I'm just really energized by your energy. So I'm going to try and match your energy.
Great.
And I like it when I'm right. And for me to be right, I'm sorry, you got to be wrong.
Great. I think this will be a great hill for you to die on. If you want to be right about another gay sequel, go.
I just want to add some nuance to your hatred. That's all I'm really here for. Okay. So I agree that this is a really bad movie. Everything about this feels like a first draft. I do think that there is, I'm not saying that this is a universal experience, but I think the core concept of like guys in their early 20s go to like an all-inclusive resort that's mostly gay guys and kind of experience this, you know, vacation hedonism, and it doesn't quite go the way anyone expects. They do not land that very well. They do not do very much with it, but I think as a core concept that has some legs.
Okay,
auditory eye roll from Patrick. Like, I always saw the whites. I honestly, and maybe this is just because I found the recast actors really hot. There were some moments with Nico, with Baseball and Nerd, Because baseball and nerd, okay, lesson to the children at home. If you and your boyfriend are going on a sex vacation together, you need to have the conversation about an open relationship before you check into the hotel.
Yes.
Because they get there and they're like, we're monogamous, pause for laughter. And then they're like, well, we kind of want to do the sex activities because that's all there is to do with this thing. There's nothing else for us to do but have sex and sit by the pool. So first they're like, let's be open. And then they do it and someone's feelings get hurt. So they're like, okay, well, maybe we only play together. And then the weird glue scene happens. And then they're going to be monogamous, but the pizza guy's hot. So like that in a clumsy way that did not work and was very poorly executed, like that felt like it could have been real. Andy wanting to have sex and just wanting to be like basically a sex addict. No judgment, Andy. You didn't write your own character. And then he meets a guy he really likes. And then it's kind of torn between like, I'm really just here to have fun, but I actually really like this guy. That is something that I kind of like resonated with and felt real.
Oh my God. Okay. Again,
they did not do anything with it. And it was like delivered terribly.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is they did give these characters human emotions on the page. Like they were like, oh, you can feel jealousy. You can feel like torn.
No, what I'm saying
and
is
then
that
they handed those scripts to honestly like the worst actors, very beautiful and probably lovely people who were terrible in this movie. And there was no nuance. And it was a trash fire.
No, what I'm saying is that the general core concept, I think, had potentially the possibility of being interesting and did tap into something, if not universal, generally true that a lot of, you know, hockey white guys experience in their early 20s. And then they handed that script to a terrible production team, didn't do any rewrites, threw in a million gross jokes and, you know, puppet crabs and weird asides that went nowhere. And that's the movie we got. But I think at the core concept as a sequel to a sex comedy, there is something here. I think I could do a remake and fix this, as I used to say in the earlier movies.
For the listeners at home, that I think there were 8 eye rolls. I don't know. To me, it's grasping at straws. I just hated it so much. So I would like to get into, I think, because maybe this is where I can like direct some of my rage.
Please.
And do know that I hear you and okay. I see you. And I dislike you.
fair.
So the cast is different. Mm-hmm. Now, at the very beginning, they're like, oh, we have to acknowledge that like these are different actors playing the same people. And I thought, did we need the same characters? Like, what? When did you get stuck in the thing you're making up where you're like, well, it has to be the same 4 people? Like, you could be like, oh, we don't have them anymore. And also, like, pour one out for Emmy Award winner. Is that real? Right? Who? Andy. Okay, here's what happened in my mind. Andy from Another Gay Movie was played by the guy who was on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. What was he in that we watched?
He was in Mambo Italiano.
Mambo! Oh, and I hated him in Mambo Italiano.
You did.
Okay, never mind. But I still stand by it. Andy the magician, like Andy in the original movie, first of all, is the lead and was great.
Okay.
Andy was great in the first movie. So like, if you didn't have the same Andy, like this Andy was beautiful and terrible. Like, it was really hard. It was like, again, like the hot guy that everyone's like, you're so funny. And you're like, no, he's not. He's just hot.
That does clue in on one of my favorite terrible moments where they're on the plane. And Perez Hilton has come over to them because they're the only non-extras on the plane and kind of says, hi, what's the deal with all of you? And they're kind of going around saying what their thing is and like, we're the couple. And Andy's like, I'm the slut. And then Perez Hilton says like, who's the leading lady? And everyone turns and says, Nico. And I love that they just decided, presumably because he was the only returning actor question mark, that now Nico is the lead. And it was so heavy. Like, it was such a telegraph moment where like the director took you by the head and said, listen, I don't care what you think is happening. Nico is now the main character. And I was like, okay, bold.
Yes. And the thing is, like I had to get halfway into another gay movie to be like, maybe I like Nico in the first one.
Right.
And unfortunately, like all of that trust we built up in the first movie went away. Because Nico was just meant to be like, essentially like this, like Nico's a side character because he's always doing these insane, like, you know, anytime they're like spoofing something, it seems to be Nico, like suddenly he's in like a wig and just like it's completely ridiculous and trying to be camp. And like, that's the character. So you're like, that's not really the lead. Like,
so, okay, here is, again, they could have landed this, but it was such a, it's not a train wreck because train wrecks eventually stop. And this just kept going. The train was on fire and yet somehow mobile. So like, again, Nico's kind of point of conflict with the set contest is that no one wants to have sex with him. And he's really eager and he's pretty much down for it with anyone, but like he gets zero play. And then he meets a mermaid who says, I like you. And then he has a dream about water sports. And there is a like singing in the rain tap dance number about golden showers. And for some reason,
just a song
that spurts that, that creates an epiphany.
Yeah.
Total disconnect. And he realizes that he likes who he is and he's a weirdo and that's okay. And he gives this speech at the like, you know, climactic orgy where he's like, I'm a weirdo, I'm an alien, and I like myself. Girl, buckle up your eyes here, okay? The result of that speech is that basically all the other weirdos come out of their hotel rooms. And it's like, because like everyone in this movie is like an Abercrombie and Fitch model from 1997. Yeah. It's like just wall to wall white guys with abs in Speedos. And then after the speech that Nico gives, you get kind of like middle-aged and or fat guys and kind of awkward looking guys. And
the t-shirts in the pool people.
The t-shirts in the pool people and some like drag queens who may be trans women. They kind of all come out where they've been hiding and they have an orgy and Nico wins the sex contest. I liked that at least the extras they got to play the unattractive people looked like actual average looking people. And they didn't do very much with it, but it played on the contrast of this like incredible like body imageness of the gay sex club or the gay sex resort.
That was the only moment that I thought, okay, like sure, that is like in someone else's hands in another movie, like a worthwhile, like, yeah, like all the people in the hotel rooms who are just like, I came for one thing and then I feel like so out of place.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna hide. And then like, oh, and there's a place for them. Great.
What I thought was a real missed opportunity there too is that like Nico's whole thing about no one wants to fuck him is they never really name it. And at the end he's like, I'm an alien. And it's like, this is about him being too femme and too gay.
Yeah.
And if they had actually like done something with the fact that the people getting laid are all like bro-y, straight acting douchebags. And Nico is not getting laid because he's really femme. And if that was like, it would have taken so little to connect that dot and to like, I realize that is like too much for a movie that has crap puppets in it and like multiple vomit scenes to just kind of like address femophobia in any kind of significant way. But it's like, you've laid out all the pieces, just put it together.
And it's also Nico saying it with like some lip gloss on and some low lights and a ripped body. Like, lest we forget, Nico has like a live like dancer influencer body. Like, yes. This is not like, I'm just like a skinny, like, it's like, bitch works out.
Yeah.
And like,
you have abs.
So yeah, I hated the cast. Andy especially was hard for me because I was in mourning over previous Andy.
There is this really bizarre scene where Andy is having sex in a hot tub and he recreates the showgirls hot tub scene.
Yes.
And okay, question for you that you were probably gonna ask me, but I don't know. Nico is watching from a distance and he is in like a pashmina shawl with opera glasses, like clutching his pearls, watching this. And I was like, I don't know what this is supposed to be, but this is very specific. Do you know what it is?
No. I was like, is he being Gina Gershon in like that movie? But I'm like, does she do a full binocular moment? And I also was planning to ask you.
I think I used to call it the Death in Venice moment because it feels very Death in Venice, but I don't actually know what it's from. Listeners at home, if you know what this reference is and you want to educate us, a little reciprocal here, please send us your knowledge.
Also, I did feel like at a certain point, I realized a big thing about what I really hated about this movie this time. And I think the other one still had a similar energy, but like, this movie is written in the voice of like the gay friend that I can't stand, where someone's like, the gay friend that I can't stand, where like anytime in a non-sexual way, someone says the word come, like come here, they have to be like, you're coming already? Or like bottom, top, I did a load of laundry. Oh yeah, you like those loads. And you're like, can we just get through? Like in some ways that's probably me, but like, but in other ways it's like, can we just please, like, you know, like, oh, it was really hard. Yeah, how hard? And that's this entire movie. That's Nico's character. Like, everything has to be, and they're not jokes, it's just being like, yeah, oh come, oh are you a bottom, and it's nothing, and it's so relentless. Like, the thing is, once you've heard one, like, we all see the joke coming. On my face. It's like when you're with a group of gays and someone says like, I don't know, I'm versatile, like, you all see it there. Like, you can see it there, but it's like, let's just leave it. Like, who's this gonna satisfy?
Everyone. No, that's funny you mentioned that, because like, I mean, that, I don't think I said this last week, but like, that is kind of the problem I have with Felicia in Priscilla. And this is like, again, like, I tend to really bristle against this personality type where it's like, just thinking of the most shocking thing you can think of is not a sense of humor.
But to me, it's not even shocking. Like, this isn't shocking. It's expected. It's like, right. It's so obvious. Like, but I also, yeah, I know, I do like your point about that, of like, yeah, like just being like, oh, well, I'm shocking. It's like, yeah, well, actually what you said is racist.
Yeah, or it's like, not a joke. It's just like, Yeah. It's like just saying like come a lot, or like talking about your mangina, and you're like, I have a crazy sense of humor. It's like, you don't have a sense of humor. You just have no other way to get a reaction from people. So you're just kind of saying the most taboo thing you can think of and calling it a personality. I find it very draining.
I realize we are now entering a territory where, like, the more I speak on this, I know that is in me.
I think there is a difference between talking about sex in kind of a crass way, which you do.
Yeah.
Versus just kind of like trying to cultivate a, like,
it's base. It's like
just kind of like putting, like bringing up random sex pun totally out of context.
Yes.
For the attention.
It's sex puns. It's sex puns. Can we get over them? Like, they're, ugh. been there, done that. Like, maybe that was, like, I can see how the foundation of sex puns, again, this is my history corner. As we all know, in 1947, Bottom the Clown was known for making a lot of sex puns. And that was exciting in the speakeasies because, because like using gay sex puns when gay sex would be so taboo, it would be like, I can see a sense of excitement over like, oh my God, we're even talking about it. Or like, we are illegal. So someone being like, oh, well, she, isn't she just, or I don't know, whatever, sex pun, would be titillating. Tis no longer.
No, and I would point out, even like Mae West, who was the queen of innuendo.
Not Bottom the Clown.
Like Mae West, who was popular literally 100 years ago, still kind of, I mean, like, and she's a genius, so maybe it's not fair to like ask everyone to be Mae West, but like, there was still a certain amount of like, it's actually more about innuendo and being unexpected as opposed to just saying like anus out of context because it gets a reaction.
It's wit. It's it's wit. It's, I don't know.
This thing of like, if I don't laugh or roll my eyes, you think I'm a prude. And I'm actually not a prude. It's a, you're not being funny.
Yeah, I'm just tired.
And it takes so much energy to pretend. And you so want a reaction from this. And it's like, it's not that funny. And it's not that surprising. And it's very autopilot.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But enough about that.
And that... And the hard thing is that, like, that's entirely this movie. Like, it's, like, Perez Hilton just, like, shouting, like, I don't know, like, close your holes for God, or I don't, whatever it is. Like, you're, like, okay, you wrote the idea. This was where you were supposed to, like, take some time to write the joke. To be, like, okay, so we want to say something where he's, like, you know, he's now found Jesus and he's walking through an orgy. Okay, what's his catchphrase? Okay, the power of Christ compels you. Power of Christ comes in you. What do we? And then everyone's like, that's not funny. Another one. And then you arrive at something funny. But they were like, oh, he likes Jesus and he's in an orgy. So he'll just be like, Jesus hates your mangina. And it's like, ugh, really? Really?
Agreed. I think take some time to write the joke is a good note for this movie.
Let's take a break and we'll be right back with the problematic.
Okay.
So do you want to take a pop up to the problematic?
I think we're going to need like one of those like two-wheelie lifters, because my back can't take this movie. Do you want to go first?
I would love to. My box, I think, is going to be called Jasper Chan.
Yeah, obviously.
Same.
Yeah.
So there are, in this film, the three Jaspers, kind of like the plastics, the Heathers, the cliches.
What have you?
And there's like the head one, there's the new one who has an electroshock cod piece that the other one electrifies to give us that physical humor we're missing, in that he does it relentlessly throughout the movie and it's never funny. But then the third Jasper is Jasper Chan, who is, I think the only comedy they give him to work with is like jokes about him being Asian.
Right. I think for me, the biggest one, because I didn't really notice it a ton after he was introduced, but the thing is, when they introduce the Jaspers, it's very much like RuPaul is showing them around the resort, and it's very much Janice in the cafeteria in Mean Girls, and she introduces who the plastics are, and she's like, you know, that's the head Jasper, he's flawless and he does things. That's Jasper Pledge, he's new, ball torture. And then for Jasper Chan, RuPaul like puts on this like broken Asian accent and says, Domo Arigato, Mr. Hairy Asshole. And I was like, why? Why? What was accomplished by this moment?
What's hard for me is sometimes when you recite lines that you hate that aren't funny, that delivery is then funny. And then I'm like, is the joke funny? But it's not. It's just like being like, it's so stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And I know there were a couple of like other, I honestly don't remember, because like sometimes Jasper Chan is just like a real person. Like, again, he like barely has any lines. He's just like a henchwoman, essentially, like running around, like trying to fuck with the four main characters. So like, but then every once in a while, what he says will like have to do, like, I don't know. I feel like it's like, they'll do like the music. Again, his name is Jasper Chan. And yeah.
It was a little reminiscent of Tiki.
Which is so funny because there is, did you think this? When there's like a stupid bit where there's like, one of them's like, oh, I found a Tiki. Like, it's like a talisman kind of thing. And they're like, I'm going to wear it for good luck. But spoiler alert, it's actually bad luck. And I'm like, is no one going to say, you made Tiki leaky? Like,
maybe they thought they'd grown.
And that's the funny thing where I'm like, you have Tiki, like you just made Tiki male. Like you're still resorting to like, it's funny because he's Asian. Like that's the entire bit.
Yeah. No, it was like, so cringy and unnecessary. And I think this is a really great example of what, like, a lot of comics of color talk about, the fact that like the thing about racist jokes is that they're really lazy.
Yeah.
Because they're like, they're tired. They're at least 1,000 years old. They're never funny. They're super obvious and they just don't contribute anything.
Yeah.
And it's that thing again of like, sometimes comedy is surprising. Sometimes comedy is shocking. But it does not work the opposite. Just saying something that is quote unquote shocking, this wasn't really that shocking other than it was offensive. Just being shocking is not the same as being funny. So you can't reverse engineer a joke like that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, is it shocking to see someone's hand rip through someone else's body? Sure.
I was shocked.
I was shocked and I was, and I was like bothered, and seeing a bunch of, like, I looked away when like everyone's just barfing. Like, because again, Andy hooks up with his dad, which I'm like, we've done this already. And it's like, Andy hooks up with his dad and then everyone just like keeps barfing like relentlessly.
I had to check out. So Andy, for no reason, there's like a guy in a dog costume and Andy wants to fuck anything. So he's like, hey, puppy. And they start doing puppy play. And then,
but it's also like more like furry stuff.
Yeah. And then the guy Andy likes comes in, and then the puppy takes off its helmets and it's Andy's dad, and then Andy vomits and the dad vomits and the guy vomits, and then they keep vomiting for at least 2 minutes. It's relentless.
And I think in general, this movie, like, I remember thinking this on the airplane, because like very quickly, first of all, it's like in the first 5 minutes, they're on the airplane and it's like the airplane's getting rocky and like chaos is everywhere. I'm like, this is a comedy. And I'm like, they're trying to do, like, this feels like when you ordered the bridesmaid's poop wedding dress scene. Mm-hmm. And then when it arrives, you got this. So they're just like, so many things happening, like, haha, it's funny. And you're like, first of all, we don't know any of these people. You just keep pushing Willem on the ground. and there's turbulence and people are jerking each other off. And you're like, we're 3 minutes in. Like, we don't know these people. This is not being done well. Perez Hilton, for no reason, is like sucking off some guy who's a priest and hits his head and then goes like, I love Jesus now. And you're like, this is nothing. This is just like rapid cuts to equally unfunny things.
It did feel a little, I think we may have talked about this with, not the first one, with earlier movies, the idea of like, I think sometimes people like, you know, like maybe grow up or see John Waters movies and understand in a really superficial way that, like, kind of like, you know, object or shock effect or like really kind of out there experimental filmmaking is a part of gay culture, and it is, but that that is still done with like
skill.
John Waters movies aren't stupid. John Waters is actually like a genius, and there is like, it's not about like him being like an intellectual. It's just like, yeah, like it's done for a purpose. There is an internal logic to the grossness. And yeah, like there's skill to it. It's not just this kind of like manic, undisciplined, we're just gonna like do, like, we're not really gonna plan this. We're just gonna kind of like, people think farting is funny. It's like, there's timing. Yes. Anything else in a box? I just realized we're still in the problematic.
It's hard. Now I'm just sad.
I've never seen you like this before.
I think I'm going through the stages of grief on the life that I led before I had to watch this movie a second time. And the life I will lead moving forward. When the Jasper is like sneaking into their room and he's like, I'm Consuela, the cleaner. So he's like in quote unquote like Hispanic drag. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, like, no.
No, no. That's a no for me.
That's a no for me.
Yeah.
Do you have any other boxes?
I didn't. I mean, no, like my big box was Jasper, and the like funny racism. I mean, it was hard. Again, this movie was so messy that it was really hard to pick out a lot of specifics.
Mm-hmm.
And so like things around, I wrote down like, I had a moment of like, is this movie slut shamey? And I was like, you can't use that much logic in this movie. Because it's not cohesive enough to have a real point of view.
No, you're literally just suffering through bits. Like, you're just like, okay, this is this scene, and I can already tell I don't like it, and it's going to be 5 minutes. So.
Yeah.
I did get really mad at one point when I thought that I felt like I was getting Ryan Murphy'd with like a character's entire essence was being disregarded when Andy was going to top the guy, because I just wrote it in all caps, Andy is a bottom. Like, Andy is nothing if not a bottom. That has been his entire, like, the entire first movie was Andy put stuff in his bum, the movie. So I was so upset. And then I realized, I guess maybe they even said, I don't know, I was like, maybe dissociating at that point, but it was like, that I guess it was like, oh, because he was going to lose his virginity too, his like top virginity. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, that's kind of sweet.
It is kind of sweet. I did appreciate that. So the main Jasper, his characterization is giving you like the villain in an 80s ski movie or like Animal House. Like, he's like the snobby frat boy, like, I say another gay movie. And that was like, that was a nice detail in a movie that didn't have a lot of detail. I really want to know if other gay people say dude this much, because they all kept saying dude to each other. And I hate that.
I think if these actors, well, like if baseball is gay in real life, he would say dude, I think.
That's true. Yeah. And that was the thing. I think if it had been one person, and the it's thing with the original so movie is that baseball in the original movie has this very put on mask for mask affect.
Yes.
Whereas in this movie, like basically everyone but Nico just kind of walks around saying dude and bro. And I'd be like, you need to acknowledge. Is that you?
They're acknowledging it.
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't have any. This is usually where we kind of trade best bits, but best bits weren't biting.
Oh, I had a different idea.
Okay.
So, but I'm thinking like, oh, this is the end of season one. Like looking back on our films, if we have like some awards to give out.
That's such a thing you should have run by me so I could have thought about it. I love it.
I know. That's fine. To be fair, I thought about it as I was getting my coffee at 11, but like very essentially like, what was your favorite movie that we watched?
I'm actually going to pull up. Give me 1 second. I'm going to go to Anchor. Anchor is where we upload our stuff, so you can download it on any of your favorite podcast apps. Okay, favorite movie that we watched?
Yes.
Oh, that's so hard.
I know this is going to be hard for you.
And I'm trying to separate favorite movie from favorite episodes because, like, I actually really love Boy Culture because of how much we hated it. But it's a bad movie, but it was fun to talk about. I really actually liked doing Wong Fu and Priscilla. To Wong Fu is kind of... obviously, But I'm a Cheerleader is, like, amazing beyond words. I like a lot of the movies we've watched. That's why we picked them. But To Wong Fu was really fun to talk about. And doing them together was really, really cool. So I'm going to say To Wong Fu.
I'm going to say my... Fuck. I just saw... Oh, shit. Okay, no. I'm going to stick to it. I think mine would be Better Than Chocolate.
I'm so glad you said that. And I thought you might say that. Yeah.
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 Why don't we can kind of do like a little bit of like Academy Award rules. So who would you give Best Actress?
Best Actress, I would have to give Best Actress. Best Actress is easily, this is not even hard, is Anne Bancroft in Torchlight Trilogy.
Fabulous.
Yourself?
I am going to give Best Actress in a Motion Picture to Natasha Lyonne.
Oh, that's so good. I feel dumb. Yeah, yeah. That's really, really good. Best Actor.
You go first.
I am going to have to give Best Actor. Oh, this is so hard. I'm going to give it to Craig Russell for Outrageous, mostly for the impersonations that he does.
That was mine.
Oh, unanimous.
Yeah, it's nice. Unanimous.
Yeah.
Best supporting actress. I don't mind. I'm so excited.
This is so hard. You go first.
I'm going to set the scene for you. We're announcing Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
My Best Supporting Actress is Anna Kendrick in Camp. In that moment, the award goes to Anna Kendrick and Crystal LaBeija loses her mind because it should have been her.
It should have been her.
And Anna Kendrick was not looking beautiful tonight.
She's not one of the legendary beauties.
Yeah.
Oh my god. This is really difficult. I want to get okay. Can I tell you who I am torn between?
Yes.
I'm torn between Tori Spelling in Trick and Kathy Moriarty in But I'm a Cheerleader.
I know, and I think be honest with yourself. That's funny.
It's Tori Spelling. It's Tori Spelling because of the cheese fries. Yeah. It's Tori Spelling. Yeah. Because of the New Jersey lesbian speech. And she sings and dances. And yeah, it's Tori Spelling. It is Tori Great. Spelling.
Best supporting actor. Blowy Joey.
Seriously?
No.
Okay.
I think my best supporting actor is Jay Moonhoo. From Short Bus because he fucked me.
That's fair. Oh, I know exactly who mine is. Mine is Paul Sorvino from Mambo Italiano.
Oh.
The dad from Mambo Italiano. Yeah, yeah.
That's a good one.
Best sound design. Kidding. best song? I mean, I don't think there were a lot of original songs.
Wait, what was the one that was like, hey, do you want
to come out and play the game? Yeah, a century plant from Camp.
No, but what was the other part that was like weird? Like you were like, wait, what's the first one? Oh yeah, I'm more than a wig. What is it?
for the want of a nail. That was so funny. I also think that move, that's I don't think they wrote that for the song though, or for the movie.
The want of a nail.
For the want of a nail.
What is the nail's objective? What? This is the story of a nail named Lucky.
You need to listen to the lyrics of that song. I only brought up this category.
The want of a nail.
The shoe.
I'm more than a wig.
Woman, a male. For me, it's definitely Nancy Sinatra's Another Gay Sunshine Day, which I forgot to talk about in this episode and in the first episode. And I think it's so, so weird that Nancy Sinatra recorded an original song for Not Another Gay Movie.
No, she didn't record it for the movie. It's just like an old...
It is about the movie. There is a reference to chickens will dance with bears. She wrote it for the movie.
Whoa.
I know.
I feel like you have... It's so funny because, like, I hate DVD main menu. Like, that thing. Like, it's like someone's phone being on loud. Like, I'm like, turn it off. Because, like, I remember I was struggling with the remote for Torch Song. So it's just like, I just want to be young and beautiful. I wish my occupation was being young and beautiful. And it was like over and over. And I'm like, oh my God.
I like it. But I'm missing the part of my brain where I get sick of, I don't get bored of stuff. If I like something, I can just watch it a million times. That was my, I was having sex with a priest in a hotel bathroom. I hit my head and now I don't get bored anymore.
But I think it's because like DVD main menus cut, like it cuts so aggressively. Like it's one thing if it's like a TikTok where it kind of loops in a way that's still pleasing to the ear. Like it'll be like the want of a net.
Well, you've learned the words and that was my objective in all of this.
I mean, I don't think you're right.
I know.
The want of a nail? That makes no sense.
It's about like, because they didn't have a nail, they lost the war, and the fact that something small ends up being very important.
They broke a nail in the war. So there's like one person's like, I don't have a leg.
Okay.
I don't have a leg.
Here is,
like, okay, but I broke my nail.
You're forcing my hand. I'm going to explain the plot of this song.
I'm forcing your nail.
You're forcing my nail, girl. And it's on a chalkboard. So it's about this guy, like, the guy who made a horseshoe was missing a nail, so the horse couldn't run, so the messenger couldn't bring a message to the king to warn the king about an invading army, so the kingdom was lost for the want of a nail. And it's about like details being important, because the devil's in the details. No one to love me. And no one to love. Anyway.
Hey, do you wanna come out and buy a nail?
It's never too late. It's never too late. Do you have a favorite episode?
I think I really liked the Torch Song Trilogy episode.
Oh, nice.
I think that's what I messaged you, right?
I think you did. You said that should be our entry to the Emmys, and I explained to you that was nonsense, because no.
What about you?
I really like a Red Up and Chocolate episode, actually.
Okay.
I think it was a really good moment for us to reflect on our positionality.
Oh.
I thought it was funny because initially I think we were a little hesitant about doing a movie that was like very outside of our experience, and it ended up being such a good conversation to like just talk. And I was a little surprised by how much we both loved lesbian rom-coms. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but like all of your favorite movies were the lesbian, like anytime we did a lesbian rom-com, you were like, off the bat, I loved this movie.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
That was
beautiful. There was so much more depth. The humor, like there was like, the humor was still present, but was so much more sophisticated. I wouldn't say in the ones we watched, there was like still necessarily a lot of subtlety. Like that seems to be a pan queer experience is definitely the humor is pretty, can be pretty on the nose and not at all subtle. But I guess the jokes in our lesbian movies were like delivered at a 7, which made you more comfortable to laugh instead of like delivered at a 10 while screaming as a boy-yo-yo-yo-yoing.
I guess I'll feel like I'm just like spitballing here, but I think like because there's a longer history of gay male representation that now gay male filmmakers have a lot more tradition to fall back on, and that can make them kind of lazy. No shade, obviously. Whereas I think because there isn't that, you can't just kind of like do a bad impersonation of John Waters and call it a movie. Mm. So like queer women have to kind of like build something from scratch.
Well, speaking of, now you're going Harvey Firestein, what happened to your voice?
Hold on, I can get it back.
Know every day I missed him.
I'm a female impersonator. I keep saying that because there's a line where when Harvey Firestein first meets Matthew Broderick, and Matthew Broderick says like, what do you do? And it's just very like under his breath and kind of self-deprecatingly, Harvey Firestein says, I'm a female impersonator. All right, maybe that's a good place to wrap up.
Thank you for listening to the first season of Video Queens.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us. It's been a real pleasure. It's been so much fun surviving quarantine with everyone.
Oh!
And yeah, so we're taking a little hiatus because I am moving across the country.
Hiatus.
But we're hoping to be back in the fall.
Yes.
And so please, we'll give you a heads up when we're coming back. I don't know how we'll do that because we only communicate with you through episodes of this show.
I mean, social media probably, Cameron.
Yeah, that's her. Okay, I forgot that existed because I'm old.
You're like, we can put up some flyers around the village.
I'll put up some flyers around British Columbia. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you do want to keep in touch with us during the off season and tell us how you'd like to see this show improve for next year, you can email us at videoqueenspod@gmail.com. We are also reachable, as Patrick has just pointed out, on social media. We're on Instagram at videoqueenspod.
And if you've enjoyed your time with us, please leave us a little review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps people find us, you know.
Also, just tell your friends because word of mouth is great. Now you have this illustrious back catalog of all the stuff we've done this year.
What privilege.
Oh my God. Okay, well, everyone have a great rest of your summer. Stay safe and we'll see you in the fall. Bye.
Bye.